It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day. It's Wednesday. Welcome to the show. This is the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we're going to have some great conversations. I have in studio with me a valued partner. That is Chris Cantwell. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning. Good to see you, Kim.
And you deserve an award. I tell you, it's crazy out there this morning. It's 6 degrees. Hey, what do you think about that global warming, Steve? 6 degrees this morning.
It just makes you wonder how cold it was before global warming started.
That's for sure. So, Chris, we're going to talk with you in the second segment about your business, Trans World Business Advisors. You're a valued partner, and so it'll be great to talk with you about that.
Looking forward to it.
And then in the third and fourth segment, Patty Kurgan, our research director, has done a very important piece regarding these, they're called TIFs, they're tax increment financing. And we have been really watching all of this kind of government giveaways to different businesses, kind of picking winners and losers. And so we will be chatting with her in the third and fourth segment. And we may have a surprise guest on that as well. We will let you know. So stay tuned on that. Be sure and check out my website. That is kimmunson.com. And that's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N. And Steve, let's kind of jump in here. First of all, you know, it's the World Series season. So I thought I'll go to the great Bambino. Babe Ruth for our inspiration. As you know, George Herman Babe Ruth Jr. was an American professional baseball player whose career in Major League Baseball spanned 22 seasons from 1914 to 1935. Nicknamed the Bambino and the Sultan of SWAT, he achieved his greatest fame as a slugging outfielder for the New York Yankees. He's regarded as one of the greatest sports heroes in American culture and is considered by many to be the greatest baseball player of all time. In 1936, Ruth was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame as one of its first five inaugural members. And you remember that movie, The Sandlot? Love that movie. Did you ever see that, Chris?
Yeah, a long time ago.
But. I love that, you know, and there was this baseball that was apparently a Babe Ruth baseball and the dog. Yeah. I mean, it's a great little movie. So anyway, he says, Babe Ruth, he says, every strike brings me closer to the next home run.
Nice.
I like that. So, okay, Steve. We're going to see if you think the funnies are funny today. The first one is...
You're going to have to work hard to beat yesterday.
Okay. This is, again, some quotes. This is by Leonard Boswell. He was an Iowa congressman. He says, take a good look at me because you'll never recognize me once my opponent gets done with me. Number two, Charles de Gaulle said, since a politician never believes what he says, he is quite surprised to be taken at his word. And
okay.
And then Doug Larson said, instead of giving a politician the keys to the city, it might be better to change the locks.
Again, I make this comment every time. Is there any date attributed to those quotes, like that last one?
No, I didn't have a date on that.
How timely.
It's very, very timely. And so let's see. Let's jump into just a few headlines here that Patty has put together for us. This is from the Colorado Sun. It says, lawmakers are finally setting out to retool Colorado's school funding formula. They'll have to reach a consensus on these questions first. A legislative committee is exploring how to revise a school funding formula many deem outdated. But lawmakers have more questions than answers and less than 2 months to decide how dollars will flow to schools. It's called the Legislative Interim Committee on School Finance. It has spent close to 3 years contemplating changes to the formula known as the Public School Finance Act of 1994. Passed a motion last week to draft legislation that would redefine the factors that influence how state dollars are dispersed among Colorado's 178 school districts. It's much more than a philosophical matter. Each factor equates to dollars for school districts, and any change to the formula is sure to create winners and losers. The committee last year was only able to advance a bill extending the committee's work another year. I tell you what, Steve, I can't believe how long it takes government to make decisions.
Well, there's a four-letter word you just used, consensus. there's the time thing. You know, how long does it take and how many politicians to come to a consensus?
Well, I think sometimes it just actually never, ever happens. And let's see, let's go to one more headline before we get over here to Patty regarding this whole Building a Better Colorado. But I thought this was really interesting. This, again, is from the Colorado Sun. And I know that Patty many times goes to Complete Colorado, which aggregates all these different news stories throughout the state as she's putting together our research for us. And then also be sure and click on their banner ad there at the top because you can see all of our original content there as well. And this is an article from the Colorado Sun, and it says that Candy Sitabaka's unapologetic nepotism misses the mark. It took Denver Councilwoman Candy Sitabaka, and she describes herself as a Democratic socialist, I'm interjecting that, less than 6 months to undermine her own message and confirm the worst fears of her detractors. Sitabaka claims she wants to change the political power structure in Denver, and in some respects she has done so through her unapologetic approach. But she can't be successful if she undermines the trust of the people she represents. After sustaining a week of criticism for attempting to put the woman she lives with on the city's payroll, Sitabaka withdrew the request when she realized it would be an unnecessary stain on our record. Unfortunately for her, these types of stains tend to set fast once spilled on the floor. Sitabaka ran a tough, disciplined, upstart campaign to earn her seat against incumbent Denver City Council President Albus Brooks last June. Throughout the campaign, Sitabaka attacked Brooks relentlessly for his connection to developers and money interest. She insinuated that Brooks fell victim to the time-tested platitude that power corrupts. And thanks to Sitabaka's own actions, Denver got a glimpse of just how fast that happens. Very interesting. So let's go ahead and jump over here. We've got Patty Kurgan on the line. Patty, it's great to have you here.
Good morning, Kim. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for all the good work you do on all this research. And thank you to the team, to Zach and to you and to Steve and Charlie and Keith. Appreciate all that you do. And as you know, we really appreciate all of our listeners as well. So you and I have been very concerned about this organization called Building a Better Colorado. And you had an experience with that, and I'd love it if you would share that with our listeners.
Sure. Well, actually, I had the experience this time around as well as a couple of years ago when they first started. And the first round, I was like, you know, there's something weird going on here. And then as I delved into it, I understood that what they were using was what is called the Delphi technique. And it's not really that hard to understand. But when you're at this table, there's, as everybody has said previously, there's usually one person there and they're sort of driving the conversation even before the main discussion happens. And they do this intentionally. And what they're trying, what they even start off and they're talking about consensus. And what they want to make sure is that people collectively make this decision. And they say, they've even said, we want to empower the citizens. And maybe we need to have the officials, our elected public officials, know that we're really concerned. So we have to step up and have a seat at the table. And then when they start the discussion, especially when the main facilitator gets up there, it becomes apparent that there's already that predetermined outcome. And the discussion is really focused on that particular outcome that they want. Obviously, this last one was that they want to get rid of Tabor. And they were very blunt. I actually was at all three meetings, and I was surprised. The very first meeting, there was only about 10 of us. And the gentleman who was leading the group, it wasn't Reeves, it was somebody else. His name is David. And David said, well, you know, we didn't want to touch this last time because the polling didn't show it, but this time it shows that people really want to change Tabor. So that's what we're all about this time. So he set the agenda the very first meeting. And again, people were, he had a list of people, and I was amazed that he went down the list of individuals and said, if there's anybody here at the table, just say that, no, this individual, when I read the name, should not be invited to any future meetings. And there were a couple individuals when their name was read, somebody at the table said, no, we're not, they shouldn't be there. So they pre-selected their audience in many ways. And even once the discussion starts, the individual who's in charge, their voice is usually very calm. If there's somebody who has questions, they somewhat disregard them. If they continue asking questions, it's like, we don't have time. So it's sort of like what happened to you, Kim, where when you did ask questions, they're like, "Wow, that's really good." But and Reeves would look at his watch and say, "You know what? We don't have time, though. We got to keep going. We told people we'd be out in 2 hours." So they dismiss any kind of conversation that will be in opposition to their own. And it's all about consensus and making people feel like they were a part of it.
Well, you know, go ahead, Patty.
And the only other comment I want to make, because I know some people were talking about the clickers. I was in the back of the room, and I there were a lot of times my clicker didn't take my answer. And there was one time in particular where they wanted you to choose three things from a list of, I think there were maybe eight. And there was only one that I wanted to choose. And not that I was, like, really enthusiastic about it, but there was only one on that list. So I hit the one that I wanted, and then I tried to have my answer go through, and it wouldn't take. It said error. So then I'm like, okay, well, I'll just choose the same one three times. And again, it came back error. So I never voted because I'm like, I'm not going to pick any of the other ones because I don't like any of the other answers. So, you know, the clickers didn't tell the true story of the audience out there. And I know that other people have told me that they had similar experiences.
And so what happened, though, with this Building Better Colorado, they said that this is nonpartisan. They said that it's not going to take a stand on issues, that it had no predetermined outcome. But in essence, what we've really seen is that, I feel it was very manipulated. And then they issued this report that said that 83% of the people that responded were actually in favor of doing something to the taxpayers, well, maybe even getting rid of Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And this has been in the crosshairs for quite some time. And we see this with Prop CC that is on the ballot right now. This is a real swipe at one of the key components of Tabor. There's three things with Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. One is, it says to PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, if you want to raise our taxes, if you want to incur debt that we have to pay off, or if you want to keep keep our refunds, our Tabor refunds, and we'll say government every year can grow with a very, I think it's very generous, Patty, population plus inflation. If there's revenues that come in above that formula, then those are to be refunded back to everyday hardworking Coloradans. And Prop CC is basically saying, hey, hardworking Coloradans, we PBIs want to keep that money forever. And that's why I'm a big no on that, Patty.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And then with Building a Better Colorado, this is just the first step for them. And we all know, well, David in the very first meeting said that next year we want a ballot initiative that will just get rid of Tabor altogether. So that's their agenda.
Yes.
It's not bipartisan. It's not neutral. It's already been determined by this group where they want everyone to go. And all the questions that they have where people voted with their clickers definitely leaned in that direction where there was a change to be made on Tabor.
Right.
So even though they say 83%, I wonder how many people like myself who didn't vote on certain questions because I didn't like any of the answers that were presented. I was against all of them.
You know what, I think I was talking to someone who is an expert on the Delphi technique yesterday, and she suggested that we request the research. And so I think that may be something, Patty, that you and I need to go to work on. But let's go to break. I've got Chris Cantwell in studio, and then in the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with you. You've been uncovering an amazing amount of information regarding corporate welfare. And that's the other question on the table, is if in fact Colorado is picking winners and losers and giving big businesses tax incentives and breaks, but yet they want to keep our Tabor tax refunds forever, it just doesn't match up. So Patty, we'll talk to you in the third and fourth segment.
Okay, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Sounds great. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, Chris Cantwell is in studio, and you will want to hear what he has to say. He's a guy of opportunity. You're one of the most positive people that I know, Chris Cantwell.
Well, thank you very much.
So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I'm thrilled to have in studio Chris Cantwell, valued partner, and it's just great to have you here.
Thanks, Kim. Glad to be here this morning.
Well, and let's have a conversation about your business. I think you have a really exciting business with Transworld Business Advisors. You help people buy and sell their dreams, right?
I do. I like to say that I work with people who create products and services that other people value, which makes their lives better. So I work with entrepreneurs, small business entrepreneurs, privately held businesses, family, close family businesses, and we work with people who are looking to acquire businesses to maybe step out of the corporate world and go be an entrepreneur. And we work with those who are looking to exit. So baby boomers are the great example of people that are exiting great businesses today. They've had these businesses for sometimes 30, 40 years. Their original exit strategies were, well, I'll give it to my kids. The baby boomers are, you know, hitting the 70s and the kids are in their 40s and have their own careers. And they just don't have any interest in taking over dad's shop or whatever it may be. So there's a lot of baby boomers out there that don't even know that businesses can be exchanged, that there are business brokers, and we're stepping out to try to help those people understand that, yeah, your business has value, you have employees, your business should go on, and there are people in the market today that are looking to acquire those businesses.
And you mentioned something during break about this baby boomer tsunami that
yes.
you see coming down in this industry. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So there's 4 million baby boomer baby boomer businesses nationally today. And there'll be about $10 trillion in business assets changing hands in the next really 10 to 12 years. Mm-hmm. So as those baby boomers are retiring, those businesses are going to come to market. And there are going to be some great opportunities for buyers to have a lot of inventory, a lot of choices. And the buyers today are, as I said, it is the younger folks, and when I say younger, late 30s, early 40s, that maybe have 15, 20 years in a corporate world, maybe have some money put aside. I mean, you can get into a business with as little as 15 to 20% down, sometimes even less. So there are a lot of people that are kind of tired of playing in the corporate world that really want to go out and be entrepreneurs. And what I like best about this, or what I'm seeing, is you've got these baby boomers who are retiring, right? And they're 70, and for the last 10, 15 years, they're running their business like they've always run it. And they don't really think about innovation and technology and marketing. They're very established. They, have a website, but it's not really working for them. The people that are buying these businesses today that are late 30s, early 40s, come in with all kinds of innovation. They think about technology. They think about marketing. They think about how they can continue to grow the brand. They have all that energy and enthusiasm and want to be entrepreneurs and want to hire more people and take the business to a next level. These sellers, these baby boomers, love that. They get to see their business go on. They get to see their employees stay. You know, the younger business owners that are stepping in have all kinds of enthusiasm, and it's great. It's so much fun when we close these transactions and see the excitement on both sides of the table.
So what is the process then? So say that I've got to think, you know, a baby boomer that might want to get out of their business. This is probably not just a short process. I mean, they probably need to sit down with you and come up with a strategy. And so it probably takes some time to figure this out, right?
Yeah, great question. So we would love to be able to talk to any business seller, anybody that owns a business that's thinking about selling, maybe 2 to 3 years prior, just to consult with them a little bit to say, hey, when we go to take your business to market, it's a 3-year look back. So what do we want these last 3 years to look like? And it's great when they have growth. And sometimes the baby boomers, again, they don't realize that they have an opportunity to sell what they have, and they don't know what to do. So a lot of times they start winding down, they take more vacations, and the business declines a little bit with the enthusiasm of the seller. Well, that makes it great for a buyer to come in and go, oh, this is a great opportunity because I can see that it's declining. I can buy it at this price instead of growing up. So if we can talk to them and say, hey, focus on these different areas of your business over the next 2 to 3 years, that's a great opportunity to sell your business at its highest point.
Well, and I got to think that cash flow is probably a really important thing. So you're talking about this established business person, and they're looking at retirement, and so their cash flow, and they've probably, you know, have things worked out so that, hey, I've worked so hard, I want to take a little bit of time off. But you're saying to get your optimum price for your business, you really need to kind of plan accordingly to that. Am I hearing you correctly?
Correct. And bringing up cash flow is a great point. Businesses are typically sold on a multiple of cash flow, and the multiples can vary and the cash flow numbers can vary. But at the end of the day, people look and shop for businesses based on the cash flow that they might be able to get on their initial investment. So that's a very important element. And there's also some components such as, what does the business owner do? Are there key employees that are doing much of the role of the business owner? Or is the person who's going to buy the business really going to have to step into their shoes and go out and physically do the work that the business owner does? So there's a number of different elements. And one other thing, too, for people that are looking at an exit in the next few years is you want to have a great advisory team. You want to have a good financial planner that says, hey, what are going to be your tax implications when you go to sell this business? What are we going to do with this money? You want to be talking to a CPA. You might want to have a good business attorney. And, of course, talk with either people who are specialists in exit strategy and exit planning, and talk with business brokers to tell you what it's going to be like when we put your business on the market.
Okay, so you're mentioning all these professionals, and it makes my head spin. Mm-hmm. So if somebody came to you, Chris Cantwell, do you have a team of those people that can help folks with that?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of people that I can recommend, right? So if somebody says, hey, I would like to meet a good financial planner, I have 2 or 3 people that I know and trust that I would be happy to introduce them to. Same thing along the lines of really good CPAs that can help with an exit strategy. Or maybe it's just a tax person that can give them some recommendations on what their tax impacts will be, mm-hmm. or maybe how to offset those tax impacts when they go to sell. So we know a ton of people in this industry that just focus on business and business exits and business acquisitions that I'm happy to introduce them to.
Okay. So, and then on the other side, so this is a young person and they hear, hey, I could buy a business with 15 to 20% down. Now, do they need to have that saved up, or is there, you know, different programs that they can access to get some of that capital, or what does that look like?
Yeah, it's good to always have some cash to put down, but you can also use your 401k. There's a number of different ways. There's even some seller financing that can help bring that to the market, you know, bring that down payment in play. 401ks, borrowing from friends and family. There's a number of different ways to structure deals that maybe you just don't need that much money down to actually get into the business that's already turnkey business, it's already cash flowing, and to make the numbers all work.
Okay, and so on both sides of the aisle here, you would love to talk to both sellers and buyers, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And what is the best way that people can get information about you? Give you a call probably, right?
Yeah, and I've got a number that's easy to remember. It's 844-SELL-BIZ. Real simple there, 844-SELL-BIZ. Or a website, ccsellsbiz.biz. I like that biz theme, in case you can't tell.
B-I-Z, right?
B-I-Z, yes.
Okay, and that number is 844-SELL-BIZ, and that'll get you right to Chris Cantwell.
Yep.
And again, 844-SELL-BIZ. You can also go to my website. We have a landing page there with all kinds of great information.
Correct.
About what you do. So you can go to Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com. and check out Chris's landing page. It'll take you over to your website. So it's great to have you here. And then you're going to stay for this conversation. It's going to be very interesting regarding this tax increment financing that in some ways, we kind of see it as corporate welfare, and that's kind of a totally different thing than what you're working with, right?
Yep.
Okay.
So looking forward to it.
Before we do that, though, Jason McBride, have you been out on the road yet this morning?
No. Are they awful?
You know, they're actually better than they were yesterday, but okay. It's 6 degrees, and I was just wondering how that global warming was working out for you.
Yeah, it's. I think I'll put on my bathing suit and go get a tan as soon as I'm done talking to you.
I know, you know. And Jason, as I was driving in here, I was thinking about that young girl, Greta Thunberg. You know that she's convinced that the world is going to burn up in, you know, just a few years. And I'm thinking, I'm really unhappy with the adults that have been teaching these kids these things, because the climate does change. There was a time here in Colorado when it was a tropical forest, and there was also a time when woolly mammoths, you know, walked here in Colorado. And so the climate does change. But to try to convince these kids that the world is going to burn up and it's 6 degrees this morning when I drive in on October 30th, it just doesn't match up. So I just had to rant a little bit, Jason.
That's okay. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, a young girl 16 years old is already that angry.
I know. It just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. So, but hey, I'm going to ask you, is there anything to be angry about regarding earnings? You were going to explain to me a little bit about earnings.
Well, I was going to talk about Beyond Meat because that was such a hot stock when it came out on the IPO at $25, and it went up to like $240 almost. And then dropped all the way down to $100. And yesterday, Kim, they came out with their earnings for the third quarter. And actually, they beat estimates. The estimate was 3 cents a share. They did 6. Revenues are up 250%. The stock dropped about 22% anyway on the earnings news. And a lot of that was because the insider lockup expired. So all the people that had put money into this before it was public for maybe just, you know, a couple bucks a share, whatever price they paid, they're allowed to start selling their stock now. And from the looks of it, they were selling yesterday in droves.
Interesting. And that is,
yeah.
And so if the people that put the upfront money, of course, if they put it, you know, bought it at a really low price, and they're getting out, but that means that they don't really maybe believe in the stock, in the company, or what would you say? What does that mean exactly?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, they might believe, but if they've, you know, made, you know, 1,000% return, sometimes it doesn't matter what you believe. It's smart to take some of your gains off the table.
Sure.
But I always love these guys. They quoted one of the early investors at saying, well, I would buy the stock at 80. I'll bet they were selling the stock at 80 as fast as they could. And they put this stuff out there to try to, you know, get other people to be buying and support the price so they can sell into you. But there are all kinds of interesting things that go on with public listings, especially with stocks like this that kind of, you know, go crazy in the market. But, you know, what you'd look for on earnings, Kim, is what I like to call accelerating earnings growth. You always compare, like, the June quarter to the June quarter last year, the September quarter to the September quarter last year, and you look at the percentage increase. So if you start seeing, you know, as we move forward in quarters, that a company's earnings, you know, are usually up 10, 12%, and then all of a sudden they jump and they're up 20%, and then the next quarter they're up 30 or 35%, you know, that's an acceleration in the rate of earnings growth, and that's one of the kind of the genetic markers that's been present in some of the biggest winning stocks of all time.
Oh, that is really interesting. And so Fascinating. You know, you've come up with such interesting stuff, Jason McBride, over there at Presidential Wealth Management.
I have to think fast, I'll tell you.
Yes, that's right. So, well, I tell you what, if we've been talking about these Roth IRAs as well, and they seem like a good tool in planning for, your future, and that action needs to be taken by the end of the year. So folks need to, give you a call. Or check out airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com, that's spelled A-I-R. Phone number is 303-694-1600. And I know that you and your colleagues will sit down with people and go through a discovery session just to make sure that they are doing all the smart things they need to for their economic well-being.
Well, that's certainly what we do. Let me throw out one more quick idea on this Roth conversion. You know, at the end of the year, a lot of times, a stock that has been down for the year will get hit even harder as people sell it for tax losses, Kim. Well, if you own a stock that's in that position and you think it's still a good company and the share price is going to recover fairly quickly, remember, when you convert from IRA to Roth, you don't have to convert at all. You can just convert like one stock over to Roth. So which would be the best? I would say it's one that's cheap right now that you believe is going to recover fairly quickly. So you convert when the thing's down in price, and if you're right, it jumps right back up after the first of the year, and you've already got a tax-free gain in that Roth IRA.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, Jason McBride, thank you so much, and keep up the good work. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks so much, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we have Chris Cantwell in studio with Trans World Business Advisors. Be sure and check out his landing page on my website, kimmunson.com. And Patty Kurgan will uncover or let us know what she's been uncovering regarding a lot of this special incentives and just a whole variety of things on corporate welfare. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Patty Kurgan.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and thrilled to have in studio with me Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Kim.
On this cold and snowy morning. And on the line, we have Patty Kurgan, Research Director for the show, and then Bill Hudson, who is with the Pagosa Springs Post. Is that right, Bill?
Pagosa Daily Post.
The Pagosa Daily Post. So welcome. It's great to have both of you on the line here. So, Patty, let's go to you first. You have done a really important op-ed that will be on my website a little bit later today regarding TIFs. They are tax increment financing tools, I guess. But they are, well, why don't you tee it up for us? Explain what they are, Patty.
Okay, well, I consider TIFs a form of corporate welfare, which we've been discussing on the show now for about a month. And just for the viewers that are joining us, corporate welfare is any financial benefit that truly grants, it's a grant by the government for a specific business or class of businesses. And it's generally not available to all businesses and taxpayers. And so last time we were talking about enterprise zones, and now today we're talking about tax incremental financing, which is TIF. And just a really short definition is it subsidizes companies by refunding or diverting a portion of their taxes to help finance development in an area or on a project site. And so, again, it's the government picking winners and losers. And what TIFs do is instead of having the development as it's being developed as well as when it's completely done, it's usually over a span of 25 years that they're given special tax breaks. So essentially what happens is they, instead of having to pay their or refund sales, let's say they're a retail company or there's retail within the development, instead of having to send along the sale taxes that the retail businesses get in that development, it goes back to the developers of the property, and they keep that because they're saying that it's going to cost so much to develop and we need funding. So it's sort of the antithesis of what Chris was talking about earlier about entrepreneurship and innovation and finding your own investors. They're using the government as the investor, and really the government is us, the taxpayers. So we as the taxpayers are the ones that are giving this money to the corporations. Plus, it impacts our tax or the tax base, because if they're not paying in any taxes, then they're actually taking taxes that should be going to government entities. It affects those taxing entities. So right now we're talking about Tabor, right? And they're saying, oh, they need more money for roads and bridges and for schools. But with a TIF, the schools through your property tax, it will remain constant as long as the TIF is in effect, which again is usually 25 years. So in Denver, they have a citizen's guide to urban renewal, because that's what a lot of TIFs are under. They say that the taxing entities, such as the Denver Public Schools and special districts, continue to receive all the tax revenues they were receiving the year a redevelopment project has begun. So that's their base year. But so they don't lose anything, but they stay at that base year for the next 25 years. They're not receiving any extra funds. So it's just not schools, it's health services, it's the fire department, water districts, libraries, you know, everything like that. So when I was researching this, I came across Bill's article and what's going down in Pagosa Springs. And that's why I asked him if he would like to join us and maybe tell us a little bit about his firsthand experience as to what's going down there, because it's the same thing that's going on if anybody's using the TIFs.
Well, and Bill Hudson, with the Pagosa Daily Post, you have written, you've really delved into this, and a most recent editorial, you said, "Are tax breaks making Colorado broke?" I guess that was part one. So tell us what you have uncovered, Bill.
So Pagosa Springs is in the southern part of the state. We're the community is about 13,000 people in the entire county. And Pagosa Springs is the only incorporated town in Archuleta County, and it's about 1,900 people within the town limits. So back in February, the new owners of the Springs Resort, which is a geothermal hot springs resort hotel, announced that they were planning to expand onto some vacant property that is next to the Springs Resort. And this is a vacant property that's been vacant for 10,000 years. Even though Pagosa Springs grew up around the hot springs, this particular 27 acres of land has never had anything on it, never had a building on it, never had any streets or roads on it. It's just a big vacant meadow. And it's a vacant meadow that's built up over millions of years from the hot springs overflow. So it's a special kind of rock that's called travertine. And the Springs Resort has had government benefits from our local municipality over the years to help it thrive as a tourist resort. But these new owners came in and said, hey, we want to develop this vacant 27 acres. We want to expand our resort. We want to put in some housing. We want to build some office buildings. We want a plaza, a central plaza for the town so that events can go on. We would like to have retail and restaurants. We would like to build a greenhouse to serve the restaurants. So a really exciting plan. A lot of people in town got excited about this central parcel in the middle of town finally being developed. And then a few months later, we heard that they were proposing an urban renewal area. And the urban renewal area has been done all over Colorado, mostly in Denver, and it's legally supposed to be a place that's blighted, a slum, or a place that has crime and disease. The way that the law is written, it's pretty obvious that this is meant for. This law was written to attend to places that were dangerous.
I just have to make an editorial comment on this, Bill. When we look at the policies that are going on down here in Denver, we're having more crime and disease and slums. So it's public policy that's creating some of that, I think, but I just had to interject that. So continue on, please.
Oh, yeah. Well, the law was written in 1959, And wasn't used a lot until just the last 20 years or so. But the actual wording is, the General Assembly finds and declares that there exist in municipalities of the state slum and blighted areas which constitute a serious and growing menace, injurious to public health, safety, morals, and welfare of the residents of the state. It's a matter of public policy, and this is, I'm quoting from the law, that municipalities shall not continue to be endangered by areas which are focal centers of disease, promote juvenile delinquency, and consume an excessive proportion of its revenues because of extra services required for police, fire, accident, hospitalization, and other forms of public protection. So obviously this law is meant to address a specific problem that municipalities may be experiencing.
And this was in 1959, you said, was when this was passed?
This was passed in 1959, or 58, I can't remember the exact date. So this law was written to address a specific problem, but lately it's been used as an economic development tool, as Patty was talking about, because developers can be reimbursed for the taxes that they newly generate, if you don't pay any attention to why the law was created.
Okay, now, Bill, we need to go to break here, so let's keep this conversation going. But one of the things that people say, or they say, well, if in fact this TIF was not used, if we didn't put in this herbal renewal district, then this business would not come in, and the tax revenues, we would not see those. So it's really better for the town or the, you know, the city or the area or whatever. And so I'd like to hear from both of you what you say about that. But Bill, I want to continue your conversation as well. So this is Kim Munson. I have Chris Cantwell with Transworld Business Advisors in studio with me. And we're going to go to break to continue this. This is really an interesting conversation on tax increment financing, which is falling under quote unquote economic development. Actually, it's government picking winners and losers. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, where we have important conversations. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me there, Kim at KimMunson.com. Chris Cantwell, it is great having you in studio. You're one of my valued partners, and you've got a landing page on my website.
I do.
And people can reach out to you if you want to buy or sell a business. And it's not just a next week thing. This is something that takes planning, so they really should reach out to you on that.
Yeah, it'd be great. And if you go to our website, you can see all our inventory of businesses that we have for sale, and we're probably close to 200 different businesses across the state that we have available for sale today. So if you just want to explore looking at what kind of opportunities are out there, feel free to do so and connect with me, and I'd be happy to tell you more about either buying or selling a business.
Oh, that's cool. So be sure and reach out to Chris Cantwell. On the line with us is Patty Kurgan, our research director, and Bill Hudson, who is the founder of the Pagosa Daily Post. And Bill, I cut you off because we had to go to break, but you were giving some very important information regarding these herbal renewal districts, as well as we're talking about TIFs, tax increment financing. And there was a law put in place in Colorado in 1959 regarding blighted areas. But I know that you are, that this is being used now, and the areas are not blighted at all. They're not a menace, but they are designated blighted so that they can do this economic development. So take it from there, Bill.
Okay, so here in Pagosa Springs, as I mentioned, we have a large vacant parcel in the center of town that's never been developed. Some developers came in, purchased the resort next door, and told us that they're going to do great things for the town, and that they would not be able to build on this property. It just does not pencil to build on this property unless they can get their taxes refunded for the next 25 years to pay for the infrastructure. And an urban renewal TIF typically can only pay for the actual streets, water lines, sewer lines, the things that are in the ground. Typically a TIF can't be structured to pay for a new hotel or a new store, housing. Usually the TIF can only be used for the infrastructure. And so that's what the developers were asking the town to consider. And it's a complicated process because according to the law, there have to be 25 people in the town who submit a petition claiming that there's blight and slum in the area and asking the town to create an urban renewal authority, which is another layer of government. You create a board, and then that board makes decisions about what happens within the urban renewal area.
Are they elected or are they appointed?
They can be. They are appointed, and it's typically the town council or the city council appoints themselves as the authority's board.
Okay.
So what we have going on in Pagosa Springs, particularly, is a petition has been submitted by some local residents claiming that the vacant property in the middle of town is a a blight and asking the town to create an authority. And the authority will always be the complete boundaries of the town. The authority takes in the whole municipal area. And then once there is an authority, a developer can come forward with a project and say, we want our taxes refunded for the next 25 years to do blah, blah, blah project on this area that we think is blighted. So we have not had that meeting yet in Pagosa Springs. That's going to happen on the 5th of November. The town council will consider whether to create the authority, and that authority would then be able to grant TIF financing, and Patty did a great job of explaining what that is to this developer for the next 25 years.
So, Patty, why don't you jump in here? What is your thoughts on this? Because it seems like there's a picking winners and losers, because you've had all these other businesses that have been in Pagosa Springs all this time, and, you know, they've been collecting taxes and paying their taxes and paying full fare. I mean, it seems kind of like it's unfair to me. What's your thoughts, Patty?
Well, exactly. And that was going to be one of my comments, that it really hurts the business owners that are in the surrounding area, because they're looking at this development not having to pay anything. And we all know that if nothing else, their property taxes are going to go up. So they're actually filling the gap that's not coming out of the redevelopment area. So it's putting more of a tax burden on those businesses. And it also hits the individual, because, again, they need X amount of dollars for the schools and for the fire departments and the other taxing districts. So everybody else has to pay their fair share. And then they're watching this area, this by these developers, where they don't have to pitch in anything. It's like, wait a minute, we've been here, we've been supporting the town for 10, 20 years, or some people have lived there all their lives, and now this developer gets special treatment? Well, you know, forget this.
Well, go ahead.
And the other comment I wanted to make based on Bill's comment is, he was saying that it's only supposed to be for blighted areas, and in the law it says we're not supposed to be building hotels. So when the article comes out, I encourage your listeners to go and look at it. Just two, right off the bat, I list 25 companies that have received TIFs. And actually, just for everybody to know, it's over $1 billion just with these 25 companies. One was Sage Hospitality Resources in 2001. They received $21 million, and that was for the redevelopment of the 16th and California streets. That's right downtown Denver. I'm not sure I would consider that blighted. Stonebridge Companies, they did a conversion into a hotel at 17th and Champa Streets in 2011, and they got $10 million. So,
wow.
You know, people are just totally disregarding the law.
Okay, and just this came in hot off the press on my phone. Susan Kochevar, you know, she's the owner of 88 Drive-In Theater. She said, TIFs hurt small, stable businesses like mine. If a new theater company came in and built in my community, they would get a tax break. Meanwhile, I would face competition who is not paying the taxes that I pay. And I think that that's just so important. Now, I think both Bill and Patty and Chris, I want to say I am not opposed to development. You know, if somebody, and I'm a real property rights girl as well, I think that you know, people should be able to, as long as they're not, I am a property rights girl in that. And Chris, you were
me
not
too.
In your head on that. But what we're talking about is people getting special deals from government and other people having to pay the full fare. So I just wanted to make that clear. Bill and Patty, we're just about out of time. I think we're going to have another conversation on this. Bill, what is your final thoughts? I thank you so much for joining us this morning. What's your final thoughts on this? And then we'll try to have another conversation on this.
Final thoughts. I've been meeting with the town council members over coffee just to chat about, you know, the pluses and minuses of what they're considering. And I really don't have a good feeling how it's going to go on November 5th. it could be a decision that supports the existing businesses, or it could be a decision that supports a development company from Texas. We don't know yet.
Okay. Okay. Well, so, you know what? We'll need to talk about this again then after that meeting. Patty, what's your final thoughts on this?
I recommend all our listeners to talk to their county officials, their city, local officials on what's going on with corporate welfare, because it's really impacting them. And we just can't take the standard line where, well, it's if we don't give them this money, the development won't happen. You know, there's been some people who said, well, you know what? They offered me the money, so of course I'm going to take it. And as a business owner, probably if I got this kind of money offered to me, I'd probably take it too, to be honest with you. The fact of the matter is there shouldn't be these corporate handouts, and it should be a level playing field. And we as citizens have to be involved when these redevelopment plans come up and voice our opposition, because it doesn't just hurt businesses. It hurts the financial bottom line of all individuals within the state.
Okay. Well, Patty Kurgan, thank you so much. Bill Hudson, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
And Chris Cantwell, it's great to have you in on this cold and snowy morning. It's great having you here.
Well, happy to be here.
So be sure and check out Trans World Business Advisors. You have a landing page at kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. Be sure and check that out. So thanks for being here.
Yep.
Okay, and our quote for today is Babe Ruth. It says, never allow the fear of striking out keep you from playing the game. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Fast on a rough road, riding high through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young. Like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.